Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. And we're without Chris today.
As people could tell by the intro.
Yeah. So, for the next 2 weeks, we're going to be short a host in each episode. This week we'll be down Chris, and next week we'll be down me.
Oh, how will we go on?
I don't know. Why we didn't cancel, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough.
So, to kind of take advantage of the absence of certain hosts, the theme of each episode will be something that the absent host is not particularly interested in, or hasn't, in this case, watched.
Despite multiple times telling him to watch it.
Yeah, and then he'll say, like, oh, I have all this time now to watch movies. And
nope, stuff. Nope, it's play Skyrim. It's not watch movies, it's play Skyrim.
Oh, okay, all right. Because you can talk about that on this cast. Well, as people saw on our website, or people have may have seen on our website, or their website, Margaret Weiss is losing the license to Marvel Heroic Roleplaying, or deciding not to renew it.
Yeah, I'm kind of, I don't know, surprised. I kind of, again, I might be wrong, but I was kind of under the impression that they canceled it because recently when Leverage and Smallville, when they lost the licenses for that, like, they had a sale and specifically said, you know, we are not renewing the license for these products. But, and again, maybe I'm wrong, I don't recall seeing anything like that for Marvel. It was just kind of, we've decided to stop the Marvel line. So, speculation on my part, but it sounds like they canceled it.
Well, while we're sad to see the Marvel Heroic Roleplaying go, the system's actually still around. And they do have that book coming out that's going to be like a fantasy heroic roleplaying.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to that. So, I mean, hopefully this kind of frees them up to do more things. I know they're doing the generic traumatic and the generic action games. So maybe they could do like a generic heroic roleplaying. Or just like different genres, like do science fiction. They finished with that PDF of Annihilation.
Hmm.
So I had some science fiction stuff in that.
For me, the Marvel stuff wasn't... No, I was kind of neutral on it. And as we said in the review, or I guess as I said in the review, I actually kind of found it hard to get into the system because of the Marvel wrapping that was on it, and you really had to know the Marvel universe, in my opinion, to kind of get a handle on the system or to play. So, yeah, I would be really excited to see, a genericized Cortex heroic role-playing game. You know, maybe like a generic fantasy or a generic superhero or, generic space or something that is a bit more accessible to people who don't necessarily know the IP that's wrapped around it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's no real barriers to access the system. I think you and Chris kind of put up your own barriers.
Yeah, probably.
And
yeah,
just kind of like, I mean, it was kind of clear who this guy is. I mean, he's Doctor Strange. I mean, you don't need to know that he's, you know, I think he's a recovering alcoholic and things like that in order to play the guy. Or know who his arch enemy is if the guy's not in the story.
Right.
So, I mean, a little bit of sad news. We were pretty shocked. But we're hoping that we're going to see some good news soon from Margaret Weiss Productions.
Yeah, well, they got the Firefly license again, so.
And some other big news in the gaming world is World of Darkness, The God Machine Chronicle is now available on DriveThruRPG.
And you were remarking what a deal that was.
If you get the non-color, if you get I don't know, what's the difference between standard and premium?
No idea.
Standard's pretty reasonable. I mean, premium is more expensive. Maybe if I knew what you got for the premium. Because they're both hardcover.
Hmm.
Wow, I'm stumped. But people don't know the God Machine Chronicles, if they remember, at the beginning of the World of Darkness rulebook, there's like kind of reference, you know, there was that picture with the two astronauts, I think, on the moon.
Yeah, it took me a while to remember that one, too. But then as soon as you said it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right.
That is the God Machine. Oh, that'd be pretty cool. And you can download a free update to the rules.
Yeah, which is a massive 104 pages.
Damn.
Yeah, I haven't gone through it yet, but I was surprised that it's that big. And, again, not having seen what's in the actual God Machine Chronicles book, the rules update looks like you would expect from a New World of Darkness book. You know, it's not just like a text document. It actually looks pretty decent.
All right. People may have noticed, or fans of True Blood may have noticed, that there was a trailer out with a little teaser for Season 6.
Which I'm really looking forward to.
So that inspired us to, and Chris also not being here, inspired us to do an episode on True Blood. We've done a TV, or actually we've done two TV episodes before. One was Game of Thrones.
Yep, I was thinking that.
And which was more just of a review. And then we did one on Friday Night Lights, mm-hmm. where we looked at things that you could take away from the TV series to use in your game, as well as character archetypes. Which we were planning to do for True Blood as well, but then we kind of, after the fourth best friend archetype, and just trying to figure out how to distinguish another, one is gay, oh, now two are gay.
One's a werewolf.
Yes. Yeah, so we decided actually to use True Blood and identify some lessons that you could take away, either like positive lessons, like really good demonstrations of how to do something, or things that you know, you might want to be wary of. Using in your game.
Like, for example, all of Season 2.
Yeah. And for those people who haven't seen True Blood, we do have a pretty strict spoiler policy, but we are talking about like 5 seasons of the show, so we might reveal some things that could be spoilers or could somehow take away your enjoyment. So, I mean, if you've always been wanting to watch True Blood and you hadn't had a chance, well then stop the episode, go watch some of it. or watch 5 seasons, come back and listen to the rest of the episode. But we will try to the best of our ability to not spoil very much. Yeah.
Yeah.
And on that note, let's talk about twist endings. Right. Sorry.
Cheesy but good.
I guess like one of the first takeaways from True Blood, it's an easy one, and it's the kind of paper, rock, scissors, the one-way paper, rock, scissors that they have going in that world where older vampire beats younger vampire beats werewolf. And it's very rarely can, you know, you break away from that.
Oh, okay. So when you say like paper, rock, scissors, you really mean like linear paper, rock, scissors where what's something better? It's more like, because paper, rock, scissors implies a circle where you're saying
well,
there isn't
one. That's why I said one way.
Yeah. But
okay, we're gonna
circle still goes one way.
right. Okay, and that's true.
But I know what you mean, and you're saying that. Well, I think you had a good point when we were discussing this. Like,
so you didn't stop the paper rock scissors analogy then.
Sorry.
You had to wait for the episode.
anyway.
Oh, paper rock scissors. Oh, that's what you said 3 times before we started recording.
Sorry. Well, no, as you said, like, setting up that sort of one-way power dynamic. How's that? Is that better than paper, rock, scissors? But
how about paper, rock?
Nuclear bomb.
No.
How about we call it what it is? Old vampire, young vampire, werewolf. All right, anyway.
Damn, you know the guy who always throws out werewolf? Always loses. And werewolf. Oh!
I'm going to need a minute after that one. All right, anyway. My point is, or rather your point was, sometimes that can make things tense, and it can force the characters in that situation to be creative. Like, you know, you are a werewolf, and you know that power dynamic. You're at the bottom. So how are you going to, you know, get a leg up on these people? How are you going to come out ahead of this situation if you are overmatched and outclassed? And you're going to have to think your way out of it. And especially for role-playing games, that's, in my opinion, that's kind of what you're supposed to do, right? You're supposed to be creative and use your brain and sort of, you know, think your way out of the situation, or try to.
Yeah, and sometimes they do think of some ways to, you know, to try to overcome it, but 9 times out of 10, they don't.
Mm.
And it's just, you know, they're just kind of checked at a certain point.
But,
you know, it's like, I mean, sometimes they'll think of ways around it, sometimes they'll think of clever traps and things like that, but it can get a bit old, because it has sucked the tension out of some scenes. Where it's like, well, you can't beat me because I'm older, and then demonstrate it, and then you're like, ah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, like at the beginning of this series, you're just like, oh, well, why not? Why don't you just kind of, you know, try? you know, or we're saying that as the audience. Why don't you just try and see what happens, you know? But yeah, throughout like five seasons now, as you've said, we've seen that example, as you said, kind of like 9 times out of 10. So yeah, it does suck the tension out of scenes, but I guess there is a positive way to use that. And, you know, again, I'm thinking of most role-playing games where the players just try and kill all the important NPCs, you know, and you're just like, well, there goes my story. Or, you know, why don't the PCs just, you know, find that bad guy who's been giving them trouble and take him down right at the beginning? So if you as the game master can sort of set up and keep showing that power dynamic that, no, 9 times out of 10, you are outclassed and you are just going to lose in a straight up fight and these guys are just better than you, but you still have to get them somehow, or even not get them. I just think, you know, I'm trying to think of an example from, I guess the vampire game you ran, Lyle, where you showed us through, you know, exposition and example, or at least I thought you showed us that, you know, the people who were the movers and shakers in the city, and the people who were older, or the vampires rather, were not to be messed with. And so we didn't. And we kind of had to try and find ways to work within the system. So I think it can be a positive example in some cases, but not all of them.
I guess it can be good, but it kind of depends on what you want to do with the characters. If you're presenting these characters as like background,
right,
as NPCs, but if you're presenting them as primary antagonists, or if you're introducing a whole group of, or whole race that's seriously outclassed by most of the other races, then that can be kind of frustrating, because what's the point of playing that particular race or that particular group of characters? And I'm thinking in particular the werewolves.
I don't know. I think fairies are at the bottom of the pack.
Okay. Maybe they're at the bottom, but they haven't played as large of a role, I guess.
That's true. I guess of the, what, two major races then?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's humans as well.
Okay.
But we're talking about the other ones. But, yeah, I mean, there's a certain mystique that comes with a werewolf that a fairy doesn't have.
Right.
So when you introduce them and they're completely outclassed and you have one guy giving a speech to everybody saying, okay, yeah, we're between the witches and the vampires, we're just going to stay out of it. You know, that's not really cool. I don't know. Just like,
it's not cool, but in that situation, it is practical. It's like, hey, we're bottom of the pile here, so how about we just stay out of it?
Nobody wants to play that.
Well, that's why they kind of didn't become major characters until, what, season four?
Yeah, don't rock the boat. Don't rock the boat, guys.
Yeah, it was kind of I guess going back to the TV show, it was kind of a letdown when you're like, oh yeah, werewolves. And then you're like, let's see what they can do. And you're like, and apparently it's not a lot. Okay. Kind of disappointed on that one. Oh.
Now, obviously not a spoiler because you learn this right away. So in True Blood, vampires are out in the open.
And, yeah, as you said, if that's a spoiler for anyone.
Premise. It is the premise of the whole thing. So that's its twist, is that they have something that we would normally present as secret, vampires. They flip that on its head and they present it as something that's quite secretive. No, the opposite
they
of what
they flip
I said.
That thing that just got flipped on its head and make it open.
They do a complete 360. And now they
put it back in the coffin.
Do I just see a vampire? Yeah, maybe. They present it as something that's really open, and they work with that, you know. And they really work with that. They have a lobby group, a vampire lobby group. They talk about, you know, if you have vampires out in the open, I mean, the premise the title includes the word True Blood, which is an artificial blood product. So they, get that out of the way. Then they talk about, you know, how would they interact? Are vampires still cool? What do they do for fun? And they start to... Again, they're working with that as well. They work with the religious angle. What do people think about that? You know, how are religious groups reacting to them?
Yeah, like I hadn't really thought of that. But yeah, if, as you said, I'll start that again. So before recording, I had kind of likened it to good science fiction, where, you know, like a good science fiction will take one premise and then run with it and spin it out into not really all the possible permutations, but just look at sort of every possible way it could affect the setting and affect society. And as you're saying, Lyle, I think True Blood does a really good job of saying, yes, vampires exist, they're out in the open, people know about them, and so now how does that affect everything else? And as you said, they've formed lobby groups, and there's now, you know, kind of, I'll call them splinter factions of religion, you know, that are out to destroy vampires because, you know, obviously they're dead, and what does that say about religion now? And even within the vampire community, there's that big split between vampires who want to mainstream and, you know, kind of live as humans, or at least coexist with humans, and there are ones who say, no, we're nothing more than predators, so why are we pretending, you know, to not be what we are?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, with good science fiction versus
space opera?
Space opera or a lot of fantasy, and just it's thrown out there and it doesn't matter. I mean, that's not the kind of story they want to tell. You know, you just throw things in, it's just like, well, there's droids, but let's not explore what that actually means.
There's droids, they're slaves, they're sentient, but right, that doesn't really
move
bother
on.
Anybody.
Moving on. I mean, you know, when people make, they have their characters, and they have their character sheet, and it's like, oh, okay, the family.
Right.
You know, where are they from? What are their interests? And I mean, that's a good thing to do just with your campaign, is like, okay, especially if you're doing something modern or very close to what you have, and you tweak it. And you're okay, so what does that mean for families? What does that mean for this particular country? What does it mean for the religion of the world now? Mm. You know, and it just kind of goes through a little checklist. You know, what do these people do for fun? You know, how does it affect that? What will be on TV in this, if these exist?
Hmm.
Or is, there's this change?
That's something that's never actually really explored, I don't think, in the True Blood series, is there a dedicated vampire TV station or TV channels? Because, yeah, as you said, they do a really good job of kind of asking themselves, okay, what would happen given this setup? Because I remember, you know, in one of the seasons, there's a vampire-friendly airline that specifically has, you know, those special shipping containers and, you know, light, tight airplanes so that vampires can get around. So I thought that was pretty, pretty cool. And then they have, like, vampire hotels with light-proof and soundproof rooms. You know, then you go to, like, vampire bars, you know, the respectable ones, and there are essentially people on tap.
Yep. You know, I mean, there was a few questions that they asked, and yeah, like, ask yourself about the economy. You now have a new consumer class. I mean, if you're introducing something like a vampire, I mean, you could be introducing something else that's different, but, you know, is it adding to the economy? Is it taking away from the economy? Mm. I mean, if you have droids, what does that mean? Are more people unemployed?
Whoa, I thought I wasn't supposed to touch that.
What, the droids?
Yeah.
Oh, like, if in a space opera, it doesn't matter. It's like, I don't think people work in Star Wars. Except farm for moisture.
Hey, yeah, what were they doing on that moisture farm then? That was their hobby. But, no, yeah, I it's always kind of bugged me, you know, that certain settings never really seem to think about stuff that is in the setting. Like, we've mentioned it before. You brought it up, Lyle. You're like, okay, well, if you have magic in a standard fantasy game that can heal people or, you know, cure disease and stuff, then why do we have doctors and why do we have physical medical supplies? Everyone would just go to a cleric or, you know, cast a heal spell if they were able to. And, you know, people try and say, oh, no, it's because it'd be really expensive and only certain people have access to it. And you're like, nah, that's a load of crap. Look at technology. Eventually, stuff becomes so common that it's cheap enough for the masses to buy. So, yeah, I think that's a really good lesson where, you know, emulate decent science fiction and really think about what this setting change or what that element in your story is, or what kind of effect that element in your story is going to have on the setting as a whole.
Right, and it doesn't necessarily mean you're committed, like, right from the beginning. It's like, okay, you have to anticipate absolutely everything. Things are going to come up, and I think that brings us into another lesson, is, like, rolling things out. And that doesn't mean that you have to have all of this anticipated or planned up front. I mean, you're going to get ideas as the story progresses. And I think that brings us to the next lesson that True Blood provides, is that you can roll things out. I mean, so when True Blood starts, it starts off focusing on the vampires. And as far as you know, when it starts, that they are the only real difference in the world.
Apart from what's going on with Sookie, which isn't really explained.
Yeah, not initially, yeah. And then they start rolling out other supernatural creatures, one of which are the werewolves, or some of which are the werewolves, as we've already revealed. And that allows, I mean, that's kind of neat, because it always keeps the story fresh, in a way.
Mm, right.
But it also gives each, like, new element its time. I mean, each major element. I mean, you don't have to necessarily devote a whole section to a hotel, because you just thought, hey, it'd be cool to have vampire hotels.
All right, and now for this season, this next session, you're only going to spend it at a vampire bar. And then, you know.
I think we're going to spend some time here. get comfortable. So, I mean, if you start throwing out, okay, the world has vampires, all right, but, and it has werewolves, oh hold on, and it has fairies, oh, okay, then that can be a little bit overwhelming.
Right.
And, I mean, if you look at something like The World of Darkness, and you don't necessarily have to play, like, all of those games together. You certainly have that option, but you don't have to. But even, like, definitely refraining from only, or definitely keeping to just one at a time, it allows you to really explore that, but you have the option of introducing new stuff as it comes, or if it helps the story.
Like, I hadn't thought of that until you just brought it up, but, like, True Blood is obviously urban fantasy, you know, and a big thing of urban fantasy, and something that Chris really likes is that the idea of, like, a hidden world. And you saying that now made me think there's an advantage to that hidden world setup when you're introducing stuff, because it's kind of compartmentalized. And in True Blood, it's compartmentalized by the different, you know, supernatural races of vampire, werewolf, fairy, shifter, other stuff that's out there. And as you said, it's introduced kind of piecemeal, but it kind of makes sense because those, you know, the different races don't really overlap all that much, and just because you know about vampires doesn't mean you're going to know about werewolves, and just because you know about werewolves doesn't mean you're going to know about fairies. And there's kind of an internal logic to that, you know, where you don't have to info dump everything at once. You can introduce things, you know, kind of piecemeal or slowly, or, you know, if in a TV show, with each new season. And the reason you didn't know about it before, both as like an audience and a character, is, well, you just didn't have any connections to that group, so how could you possibly have known about them? And so long as, you know, they don't, I guess, invalidate or, you know, mess up other stuff that you've already set up about the world, well, then it should be a pretty smooth integration.
No, that's a good point about the danger of, like, rolling things out is, like, you don't want to invalidate stuff. I mean, you don't want to make something that's too logically inconsistent, or, I mean, going to raise the kind of questions you don't want to have to answer, like, hey, how come we didn't know about this before?
Right. In other words, you don't want people to throw down, you know, the bull crap card. Like, oh, come on.
Yeah, do you want people to go, what, there's werewolves now? Oh, awesome. So I guess they were kind of hidden, right? Yeah, yeah. Instead of going, there's where, what, wait? What happened there?
Yeah. I smell retcon.
Yeah. So they've done a pretty good job. I mean, sure, I mean, if you have something in the open, then everything else has got to be, well, that was always secret. Okay, makes sense.
Hmm. So, like, it could be misdirection, but sometimes having stuff out in the open, you know, obviously draws attention away from stuff that is hidden. And, I mean, it might be a little bit heavy-handed, but, like, to use it as an example, it's like, well, you didn't really know about werewolves until now because you guys were too busy focused on vampires. You know, vampires are out in the open, and there were clues there, you just kind of didn't really see them because you were occupied with this other big thing that's right there in front of you.
No, that's good. And I think True Blood has done a good job of both, you know, using that misdirection to kind of obfuscate the other, you know, supernatural creatures, but also kind of obfuscates the layers in the vampire world. So that's one thing that you can do. And sometimes the hidden society is just a hidden society or a secret society. But the really interesting secret society is like a Scientologist, you know? Mm. I mean, there's that tip, and then, I mean, you don't even want to know what's underneath, you know?
I kind of actually do. I mean, not because I've joined it and because that's how I know, you know, what's going on, but I want to know what's going on there while still remaining outside of it.
Yeah, but you're like, hey, this is the stuff that's out in the open? What? What could possibly be secret?
It could be a giant letdown. Oh, they're incredibly normal. And the obfuscation was that all that wacky stuff that they let the public know.
And I think a good example in one of our games was actually Chris's Asmodeus Temple, which was really out in the open, even though they were like an evil temple in a city that was good. I mean, there was a bit of story. I mean, it was kind of plausible.
If a bit of story, you mean total frustration for the players. Remember that? We were like, no, these guys are evil. We know they're evil.
Yeah. But, I mean, there was a thing. I mean, they are openly evil, so what's secret? Is there a secret to them? Is there a secret to somebody else? But you could kind of operate on those two levels. And I don't think we got too much into their kind of secret level. But that's pretty exciting. I mean, this is what you know about them. So what don't you know about them? And, I mean, it's been done to really good effect in some game systems when there's like, okay, this is the government. We all know what the government is, but what is the government hiding?
Right.
And then run from there. But imagine doing that with something like, oh yeah, like Cthulhu exists and he's, you know, he's got this little country, but guess what he's hiding? You know, even more, something even more epic than, I don't know, Cthulhu. I don't know. Maybe that was a bad example, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I was going to say, like, I think, maybe it's just me personally, but you bringing up the idea of, yeah, the government, you know. My opinion, the really kind of interesting hidden societies or out-in-the-open stuff is the organizations or the groups that are really normal. You know, like, I guess a good example is in True Blood, I forget what it's called, but, like, the vampire rights lobby, you know. They are attempting and trying to be normal. You know, they go on TV and they do interviews. They act normal. They promote mainstreaming. And I don't know. I just really like it because you're like, is what they're saying to the public true? Or are they hiding something? And if they are having to hide something, it must be something really big because of how they're presenting themselves.
You know, I was thinking about V. You know, I was also thinking about that Twilight Zone episode where, you know, what is it, Ways to Serve Man?
Right.
And it turns out to be a cookbook.
Yeah, and the famous Simpsons parody of that episode, right.
Yeah, and they keep blowing away the dust on the thing.
Yeah.
But also V, I mean, aliens have just invaded and they're down and you're like, wow, and it's like, wow, like, and then there's something more. I don't remember it too much, but have you ever seen the movie and TV series called Alien Nation?
I think that was one of those shows that was always kind of on as reruns for me, and never having seen the beginning, it wasn't that interesting. Is that the one where the aliens kind of looked like people and drank rotten milk?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, well, they kind of look like people. They come down. Primarily, it's set in Los Angeles, and maybe that's pretty much where they settled. But that is an interesting thing to work with in that, you got the aliens, and that blows your mind. Okay, we're no longer alone. Okay, let's explore that and what those implications would be, right? And, you know, kind of working with, okay, now we have aliens. What do we do with that? But then, do they have, like, a secret society? Do they have some secrets that they're not sharing? You know, so, I mean, you've kind of, like, just completely turned the world on its end by just plopping them down. And people are going to focus on that initially and, of course, work with that and do whatever you want. But then that gives you that, you know, that kind of distraction to do a trick. Yeah, it's like you're a magician and everybody's focusing on, you know, the beautiful assistant, and then that's your time to do your sleight of hand.
Yeah, it's funny, like I guess a more recent movie that I was thinking of was District 9, where they just kind of like plop the aliens down and what's going on? And so I was thinking that, and so when you said it's a magician and that people are busy looking at there, and almost went ugly alien, and I'm like, oh no, beautiful assistant. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I thought about District 9 as well, but one thing about District 9 is they were all segregated, and I mean, they're telling that different story about, like, apartheid.
Right, right.
And that's great. What does that mean? I was just thinking, within Alien Nation, they're more integrated.
Yeah, I remember that a little bit.
In V, they're more as equals or even superiors. So, like, those kind of were things. But yeah, absolutely, District 9 could be a lot of secrets going on there. Now, another lesson just about introducing stuff. And again, this was secret, is in season 2, it's in True Blood, is the weakest season. And there are good things in season 2, but for the most part, you kind of got to power through it.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But, I mean, then you come to some of the better seasons in 3, 4, and 5. But I think there's a lesson there, and there's a lesson that actually, like, Friday Night Lights learned while they were actually in the progress of a story, and that was, if something's not working, just cut it, you know? And this is a lesson that you could learn, you know, if you watch season 2, and there's a certain point we got, you're going to think, I really don't need this storyline.
Mm. And it's the main storyline, too, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you're just like, you would forgive them if they just kind of, like, finished off in one episode and everybody had amnesia the next day. and that's just something, is like sometimes something's just not working, and if you can do a nice, you know, seg into something better, do that. If not, just however hammy or forced it seems, just end it.
So you're actually saying it's kind of, in certain situations, it's better to just kill that plot thread, no matter how ragged the cutoff point is going to be, just to move on to something else to essentially kind of save the game?
Yeah, and that's a good way of putting it. It's just like, yeah, just make the cut. And, I mean, yeah, you might get the BS cards thrown on the table for that one session.
Right.
But people are going to appreciate that in the long run.
Hmm.
I mean, when you think about it, about halfway through season 2, would you have been really unhappy if that storyline just got, like, cut?
Hmm. No.
And they just go, and this is what it means, and we're going to resolve it now.
After it could have been like the first third of the series, and like, okay, it's gone. Oh, thank God. At least this hasn't come up before, but I wonder, not having read the Southern Vampire Mysteries, and because True Blood is based on a book series, I wonder if the writers kind of felt their hands were tied. And again, not having read the book, I don't know if season 2 of the TV series follows any of the books, but if it does, maybe the writer said, we kind of feel like we have to do this story because it's based on the source material, which isn't something you have to worry about in a game, but in a TV series based off of another, you know, book series, maybe that's something you have to consider.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And of course, in a TV show, they have other considerations of they've hired people, they've signed contracts. And fortunately, in Friday Night Lights, their storyline involved all the regulars.
Right.
That just wasn't working, and then they pretty much just ended it, and no one talked about it again. And in this case, they had hired a cheap guest star,
right,
for that run, and it certainly wasn't her fault. I mean, she did a great job for what she had, but, I mean, that makes it a lot more difficult. I mean, you could pay them out, I suppose, but, or maybe they thought it was working. It was like, well, and it happened to be one of those things, and this actually might make it difficult for you. I just thought of this, is this was a storyline that gave two supporting characters something more to do.
Right.
After season 1 of just being, you know, the best friends. And you also got to think, it's like, this is something to develop these two characters, and you might do this. I mean, you can't always have a storyline that's devoted to all four people. Sometimes you got to make a person the focal point of a storyline, and this could be your opportunity to make, you know, the patient one, the focal point. And then as you get into it, it was like, well, this isn't working.
Well, I think that's a good...
And then you might be reluctant to, like, stop it. I mean, we just spent 3 months on such a storyline, and we're going to cut this after 2 weeks.
Right.
I mean, that's an added complication. And then I guess one thing to suggest is then just kind of, you know, cut it ragged, but maybe make that cut lead into something else or something, however ragged, or just like, or even just pull the people aside and say, hey, we're just going to try something else.
You know, I again, you know, since we're talking about role-playing games here, for the most part, I think that it's much easier to do in a role-playing game, where you can just kind of, yeah, leave that plot thread hanging. Like, if someone has to disappear, well, you know, you can find an excuse for that character to kind of, like, if it's an NPC, find an excuse for them to, like, slip off, and then they're just gone. Maybe with a note left that said, you know, they have, you know, ambiguous business off somewhere else they have to attend to, and hey, you just kind of never know what that business is. And if the time is right, well, maybe that character will come back, maybe they won't, you know. So I think it's a lot easier to do in a role-playing game than in a television series, because, as you said, Lyle, they don't have to worry about actors or, you know, anything else like that. So I would just say, yeah, maybe take the person or the people involved aside and ask them if they're enjoying, you know, having this spotlight. And if they are, well, maybe find a way to, you know, wrap it up nicely. But yeah, if they just say it's not working, then just, yeah, cut it loose.
Are you enjoying this? Oh, I'm loving it. Mm.
Yeah, you're just like, then you're like, oh, all right, crap.
You're the only one.
Well, then that's when the, like, you know, the will of the individual has to bow to the will of the group. And you can say, that's great. I'm glad you're enjoying it. I feel like I'm neglecting these other players and, you know, have to move on. Like, oh, and then that's when the problem starts. Like, move on. We only had like one session of my story. And then you're like, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, we did 3 months on Andrews. Well, yeah.
He was a bit more interesting than you. Sorry.
And this lesson might be a little more narrow than the other ones, but it's everything's better with a little spirituality or mythology.
Or Battletech.
But if you can't work in Battletech, the mythology's all right. So, and I'm thinking about, in particular, the werewolves, but also, of course, the vampires, because they are the focal point. But it's just because the werewolves haven't had as much time.
Right.
So when you see them and what they've done with them, they've done actually a lot, and they've created like a real pack mentality and a philosophy. I mean, it was only in one episode that they really get into it, but I thought that was really good, and it was just that really helped me to understand who they are and how they think and why they would be a little bit different than a human.
And unfortunately, they're still weak, but didn't make them any more powerful.
Yeah,
but
still weak.
But you understood them. Oh, they're sensitive werewolves.
Yeah, no, it's all about the pack. We're strong as a pack. Oh, except against any vampire. Any vampire, even a pack, is useless.
Yeah. You mean a pack of werewolves and a pack of vampires? No, just one. Just one vampire.
You ever see The Straight Story?
No, I haven't.
And the guy, his last name is Straight. It's the one where the guy rides on that little riding lawnmower.
Okay.
To go see his brother. It's a good movie. But he has this like campfire scene where he's like, take this stick and try to break it.
All right.
And then take a bunch of sticks and try to break that. You see, oh, you can't, right? Maybe like the werewolves do that. It's like, take this stick and break it. Ksh, all right, take these bundle of this pack of sticks. Oh, I can't break it. All right, let's just give it to this vampire. Boom! Oh, he broke them all. Easy. Yes. Learn from that. Don't go up against the vampire. Really?
Yeah, that was a good one. But
it kind of reminds me of Rifts. I don't know if you've played Rifts. You know, they have mega damage capacity and
standard damage
capacity, and it's like, wow, you know, I've got like 150 SDC, and then it's just like, oh, one hit, you know, one point of mega damage capacity, I'm dead. I was a superhero in my other world.
I think I'm going to go back there. Yeah.
No, but and what they did with the vampire mythology, again, was really good. And
yeah, I was going to say, like, the vampires are obviously the focus of the series, but like it might have been they actually didn't spend that much time on vampire spirituality until the later seasons, specifically season 5.
Mm.
I mean, like, you get hints of it before, but they never really deal with it. Maybe because they're busy dealing with other stuff about vampires, you know, just kind of like them being there. What does that mean? And it's kind of like a bit more focusing on the human reaction, or I guess like the immediate reaction. And then, you know, as the series progresses, then you have more time to delve into, you know, philosophical and religious matters. But I do like what they're doing with it. And yeah, I definitely agree that kind of adding that level of spirituality makes it better. It kind of makes it feel like a real person, you know?
No, absolutely. Yeah. Right. I mean, people have an origin story. I mean, or they've got cultural baggage. They have ideas of where they came from, however outlandish they may seem.
Mm.
And they strip that away. I mean, your character isn't as fully developed in that world, and isn't as fully developed. You know, and to have beliefs that some people do believe and some people don't believe, again, that just makes it richer.
Yeah, it's kind of always bothered me. You know, you get like the space opera things, and the entire planet of this one race is all identical. You know, they're all kind of the same, and they all speak the same language, or they all have the same religion, or lack of it, or they all kind of, you know, think the same way. And I've always just thought, maybe even as a kid, I'm like, how many religions and languages and cultures are there on Earth, and why don't science fiction planets mirror that? You know, wouldn't they? So I kind of think that's the same in, you know, True Blood. Like, you, especially with, like, you see it a lot in the vampires, again, because they are the focus, so you see a lot of different kind of philosophies and ways to address spirituality, and we haven't really seen that with the werewolves yet. I mean, we've seen one, I guess, ideology, or one kind of, what's the word I'm looking for, path of spirituality, if you will. Now, that doesn't really sound right, but I'll take it. But that's probably only because we've really only seen one we've really only seen one werewolf pack. And if we saw others, we would probably see different ways of thought, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that is good about where, yeah, like having different ideas. And it does get kind of frustrating. Not only do they all think the same on a planet, but they all dress the same.
Right.
And I guess, you know, they're kind of unified, but some people have done a really good job of it where the planet has unified on many levels, but there's still different religions and different beliefs. So, I mean, just because, yeah, they agree on, you know, these three things doesn't mean they have to agree on everything.
Right. It kind of makes me think of the Mongol hordes from the last episode. Hey, we're all unified that we're going to use these slaves as a living shield wall, but we're all very diverse religions.
Yeah, we accept them all.
All
equally good flesh walls.
Hey, maybe, you know that, what's that Marine saying? Kill them all, let God sort them out? Hey, I bet you the first people to come up with that one, the Mongols.
Yeah, except they said gods. Let the gods sort them out.
Yeah.
Whoever. We're not judging.
Well, I guess for me, one of the lessons of True Blood that I really like is, kind of, well, for me, it was character relationships. And part of the reason why True Blood worked for me compared to, like, so much other similar media is the characters had solid and kind of realistic reasons to be connected, you know, or to be interested in one another. I'm specifically thinking of, you know, the initial kind of, I guess, you know, romantic connection between Bill and Sookie, where, okay, you look at other media like Twilight or Vampire Diaries or any of the other, you know, multitude of vampire romance spinoffs, and these two people really don't have any solid reason to stay together other than it's a plot device, you know? And, of course, I'm not saying it's not a plot device in True Blood, but there was a pretty decent reason for Bill to be interested in Sookie, which is possibly a spoiler, so I won't say. But there was another, you know, very good reason for Sookie to be interested in Bill, so it kind of made sense where other, you know, examples of it would just fall apart if it was, you know, quote-unquote reality, so... You know, I think that's definitely something to adopt and put into your game. Instead of just throwing characters together, especially for game masters when they're kind of building a story, I think there has to be really solid reasons why people are involved with each other, whether it's romantic or otherwise. Like, when I was running that Dungeons & Dragons, you know, 3.5 game for us, like, way back years ago, I adapted a lot of modules, and I changed a lot of monsters in them because it just seemed like everybody and their mother was working together just because they were evil, where that always kind of bugged me. You know, I'm like, but come on, drow think they're better than everybody else. Why do they always associate with these other, you know, monstrous races in the published modules just because they're evil? That's kind of dumb.
No, I think it's a good point, and just something to add to that is, I mean, you have the initial connections, and then you can build additional ones, and that makes it more interesting because it allows you to sever that initial one. And again, like, let's say it is a love interest at first, and then they can develop another bond, so you don't necessarily have to always have them as a love interest.
Right.
Which can be limiting.
I think kind of the way any TV series or book would probably do it is you do need, at least at the beginning, some pretty solid, what I'll call primary connections, but then... Like, secondary connections can be built, you know, organically during the game, just kind of like they do it in the True Blood series. Because, again, I'll just use, like, the romance, you know, or the romantic connection as an example. You know, there's kind of a reason for Eric to be around at the beginning. You know, he's the sheriff of Area 5, which Bill is a part of. So he's kind of a periphery character who hangs around Sookie, and, like, the more they interact... their connection grows organically until, you know, it becomes a primary relationship. So I think you can do that in the in a game as well, you know? Just, again, in that example I just used, there's a very solid reason for Eric to be around Bill, which, you know, gives him a reason to be around Sookie. So that doesn't have to be a solid connection between everyone. It's sort of just like a web, you know? Character A is connected to character B, who's connected to character C, you know? And it doesn't have to be linear like that, but I just can't verbally describe a spider web. So that's the best I can do.
Pull the lid off a spider web.
Yeah, you know, because I was imagining, you know, imagine there are a lot more connections than just A to B to C. I would just, you know, all right, again, one of those classic Wayneisms that sounded funnier in my head. Verbally describe a spider web. No, obviously didn't work.
Oh, I just didn't understand what you said.
Oh, no.
I heard blow the lid off a spider web and...
Oh, blow the lid off a spider web. Sorry. I'll verbally describe a spider web.
Oh, you didn't say blow the lid off a spider web.
No, I said... I can't verbally describe a spider web.
Oh, okay. I was like, what is blow the lid off a spider web?
That's going to be my new catchphrase. Blow the lid off this spider web.
It's a good conversation ender.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
All right, well, that ends our episode on True Blood. The episode we could only do because Chris isn't here because he doesn't watch True Blood. So next week will be an episode that I'm not particularly interested in, but I think a lot of people will be. After that, in 2 weeks' time, we're going to be doing a series that we haven't done very often. So hopefully people will enjoy that one. All right.
I'm looking forward to that one, too.
Well, that's great, Wayne.
And hopefully other people are as well. Because it's all about me. All right. Oh, that's right. I got to do the thing, don't I?
I could try it.
All right, yeah. If you want to do it, go for it.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. You can check us out on our website at www.idleradhands.com, idleradhands.com. You can also check us out on iTunes, Facebook, Stitcher, and DriveThruRPG. We're also on Twitter, but that's just updates from us. We don't actually post episodes on there. Probably don't need to say that.
140 character episode. Oh, that's so going in the outtakes.
Well, you can obviously tell I'm not the poster on Twitter. This Twitter thing. Only 140 characters, really? Alright. Well, see you next time.
Bye.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG, the one true source for RPGs. Oh,
that takes us. I know what he says doing that stuff.
Well, thank you for joining us. See us online at www.idlredhands.com. This is provided by Tripod Jimmy and the song Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.
HANDS.com. Or you can check us out on Twitter at DriveThruRPG, iTunes. Are we going to keep in all these pauses? And Stitcher. Wow.
I'm dying over here.
I think I just tune Chris out when he does this part.